Don't sacrifice the goal because your habits suck. Change your habits.
My life now is far greater than my life in the big leagues. Mm. You want to be negative, surround yourself with people that are negative. Mm. You want to be positive, try your best to surround yourself with people that are positive. You want to be more Christ-like, surround yourself with Christians. I wanted to be that dog. You know, I wanted to be locked in. I wanted to just kill the other guy. Yeah. And there's no time for lovey-dovey Jesus, you know. So, you know, I hope that, you know, your platform continues to grow, just like I did at SoFresh, you know. I think at that time you had like maybe 90,000 followers, and I was like, bro, you got 90,000 followers.
Already successful.
You're already there. Charge, man. Go charge it. Yeah. And, man, look at you now. Mm. Look at you now.
Dude.
Two kids.
That is what I think, too, is like my favorite part of life is being a dad.
No doubt.
Like, straight up, I don't care what the accolades or achievements are. I think we probably share that in common. Like, family life is everything. That's success.
Yeah, you know? Man. No doubt. That's the American dream, man. Get your little piece of land, get your family, enjoy the life.
You got that too. I want to dive into that too. The question I wanted to start with is, has there been like a moment lately that you just realized in the moment, like, yo, this is what life's all about? And that could be, maybe it's like a big moment or a small moment or a challenge, but something that you were like really grateful for and that you had that recognition, like, yeah, this is what life's all about.
Yeah. This is what life's all about moment. I don't know, but I mean, one thing that's pretty cool that I've been doing that I think, you know, is a little bit of a full circle type deal is I took over as the head coach of Lakewood Ranch High School.
Yeah.
You know, my oldest son's a freshman there. You know, so this is a new journey, you know, kind of a new challenge in my life. But up in this clubhouse, which, you know, we can get into more, but me and my wife, like, basically, like, clean this thing out and, like, have redone it. And I've got this little office. And when I walk into this office, you know, I've got, you know, Lord, use me here for your glory, you know. And I'm trying to kind of use this platform of high school baseball coach, you know, father, husband, Christian, in the community, part of a, you know, community member, as this opportunity to just glorify God. And like, you know, we went down to Venice. I took the team, Lakewood Ranch High School. Well, I guess it's called the Lakewood Ranch Rough Riders because FHSAA, da, 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 da.
Oh, wow.
I took the team down there and we beat Venice, you know, and maybe it was Venice's A team, maybe it wasn't, whatever. But, you know, these boys are so happy, man. They're playing great baseball. They're confident. And to me, it's like, you know, that's what is so good about baseball, which I tried to kind of maybe run from for a while.
Yeah.
But now I kind of just feel like I'm chasing after what I'm doing, and I'm you know, trying to glorify God in it. So that's kind of like the full circle moment where it's like, this is fun, man. This is, I'm so glad I took this opportunity. I'm so glad I'm doing this. I'm so glad that God has me right here, Ryan.
Yeah. Back in your hometown too.
That's exactly
being a Sarasota native is really cool on top of that.
Yeah.
Who's coaching at Venice right now? Is it Guthrie?
Faulkner is still the dude.
He's been the dude for so long.
I know.
Yeah. That's great, man. So that's actually we can start there too. I love that. So you're coaching at Lakewood Ranch High, and we'll get into like a little bit about your career, just like your life now. But what do you think? So I was thinking about this earlier. When you think about coaching these athletes, like, what do you want them to know about success that you wish you knew earlier?
I mean, I think the first thing is that you're good enough. You know, for me, you know, I was always on to the next, on to the next, on to the next, on to the next. I'm not good enough. I gotta get better. But I think like the real fruit maybe is knowing that you are good enough, going in the confidence instead of like the fear of not being good enough.
Mm.
So I'm trying to build these kids' confidence up, so that they will work, so that they will, you know, enjoy the process. Instead of telling them, you're not good enough, we're not good enough. No, we're good enough. We just got to keep peeling back the layers, you know.
That's fire. So when do you think, because I am at, like, that's for me, and my follow-up question would be something that I went through. But, yeah, the fear of losing, the fear of failure, the fear of what people would say. You know, all that stuff plays such a big role in capping one's potential and ability, even on the field. So, yeah, the fear of that, I would imagine, really diminishes when you take your approach. When you say, we're good enough, you know, regardless of this outcome, we're still what we are made of. We're not going to be dictated or defined by success or failure. I love that approach.
I mean, it's a, we do so much in our lives of like breaking ourselves down. Mm-hmm. You know, I read The Inner Game of Tennis recently, or listened to the audiobook. But like, I'm just trying to build up that relationship with person number two in my head. You know, instead of that person constantly breaking me down, I want that person to be lifting me up. I want that person, you can do it. Let's go. You know, 4:30 in the morning, I'm sitting there on my front porch, you know, sipping my coffee going like, man, am I going to take this run or am I not going to take this run? And that person number two going, man, let's go, man. You love it. You enjoy it. You know, go get it. You know, go out there and go for the run. Instead of being like, nah, just lay back today, you know, chill, you know, you don't have to go do it. You know, you're in good shape. You know, take it easy. Person number two is becoming more of an advocate than, you know, a detriment.
So, yeah, person number two, person number one, when did you come up with this idea?
The Inner Game of Tennis.
Okay, so that's from the game.
So maybe I've interpreted it that way. Maybe, you know, there's a lot of people smarter in this world than me. So let's put that out there right now. And maybe I misinterpreted it, but that's where I got it from. Yeah. You know, that's what I took out of it. That this, you know, there's like this person that's in you that you can do everything, you are good enough, and there's this other person on the other side of the line that's basically telling you like, no. Well, they're either telling you one or two things, that you're not good enough, you suck. Which is what happens when you going 0-for-4, striking out, making an error. God, this is awful. Slamming your helmet. Like, man, this is so brutal.
Yeah.
Or like, hey, man, chill. You're going to get the next one. Just lock in, you know, get back in focus, turn the page, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So this person number two, you know, I'm looking for that person, you know, going forward in my life to be the advocate.
Mm-hmm. That's fire. And it's interesting that whether it's on purpose or not, because like you said, you don't know how you took it, if it's real, but that perception is reality for you, which is useful. But person one is the first thought or the first phrase. And it sounds like person one is this negative Nancy, this person who's limiting and the enemy. Person number one is the liar.
Person number one is what you are fully capable of.
Mm.
That's you. Like when you're born, you can walk. Right? And you keep walking.
Right away.
Well, it's in you. Yeah. It's in you. Yeah. You know, like you're gonna walk.
Yeah.
You are going, you know, Lord willing,
yeah,
and in most cases, you are going to walk.
Right.
When you fall the first time, you don't tell yourself, oh, I'm terrible at walking. You just keep getting up and going. Mm. Keep getting up and going. There's no one, nothing is built in your mind yet to tell you that you're a failure.
Mm.
But as we continue to go on in life, you know, everything that we're fed, for the most part, and what we're feeding ourselves on this person number two is negative. Mm. So it's like, when your little girl fell for the first time, you didn't coach her.
Right.
You know, you didn't say, oh, you got to put your right foot in front of your leg. Why are you so stubborn? You know, you just said, hey, come on, honey, get up and walk. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do this. You know, we got this. You know, but the negativity just keeps on pounding in as we get older.
Yeah.
And we start to just lose the, I can do it. I'm going to do it. I was born to do it attitude. And we start telling ourselves that we can't. We start drawing these lines and boxing ourselves in.
That's fire. Yeah. So I think the main thing is, the takeaway for me is there's two voices typically. One is that limiting voice, that liar voice, the enemy, the person who is not helping you become everything you are. And the second one would be the voice of truth, that like, I'm capable of this. Yeah.
You are capable. Number one, person number one is that you are your capability as a human being.
Yeah.
One, you're limitless.
Yeah.
You can do it. Two is either the person that's lifting you up or the person that's breaking you down in your own head.
Yeah. That's fascinating too, because I think I'm focused on surrounding myself with people who speak life into me and encourage me and help me become the man that I know I'm capable of. But it's so interesting because all of us, no matter what you believe in, where you come from, what you look like or talk like, we all have at least two voices inside, and it's the enemy or the encourager or the truth.
That's right, man.
How has this played out in your lifetime? Did you recognize this at a young age? Is this something that you just kind of are becoming aware of? I mean, when did this start, and then how has that shaped you?
I don't know. I think there was a point in my life, probably a third of the way through my baseball career. So, you know, a couple years into my career, so say 2014-ish. Or maybe it was a touch earlier than that, but you know, I talk to the boys in it starts with my own children, and I talk to, you know, the team, you know, about like anchors, you know, having anchors in your life. And at one point in my life, I had to decide, you know, who was putting wind in my sail and who was holding me back. And I had to cut that tie. you know, and that is really where it started.
You know? So the anchor people are the people who are holding you back.
That's exactly right, man. Like the people that, you know, are just negative all the time, the people that are, you know, not lifting you up, that aren't, you know, just bettering you. And I'm not saying that we can't be around people that need our help, you know, because like, you know, Jesus didn't come to help the people in the hospital, you know, he didn't come for the healthy people.
Yeah.
You know? And so we're not called to go to, you know, to just only the churches and only the people that are doing great and are and going to lift us up. But, you know, the people that I want to surround myself the most with are people that are encouraging me, that are adding to my value, that are people that are encouraging me and challenging me and pushing me, opposed to constantly pulling me, you know, in the negative direction.
100%. Because you can't help or be a light and impact all types of people if you're not anchored in like who you are and you have people pouring into you, or you're consuming truth and you can, you know who you are, you know whose you are.
It's
who
just
you
like
are.
I spoke at a mental health thing at the school the other day, and it's like, and maybe this is true, and like this is one of those moments where I may not be as smart as, you know, maybe I think I am.
Yeah.
But like the algorithm of the algorithm, you know, works off of you. If you say you want French fries, it's gonna give you French fries. You
100%. Know?
If you say you want to be lifted up every single day, it's going to give you Brian Pruitt. You know, if you say, hey, I want to, you know, be inspired to go work out, you know, that's what I'm finding.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the same exact thing in life. If you want to be negative, surround yourself with people that are negative. Mm-hmm. You want to be positive, try your best to surround yourself with people that are positive. You want to be more Christ-like, surround yourself with Christians. You know, is
that's it, bro. That's so good. So when you think about being able to give that to other people, encourage people, and like fill people up, how do you fill yourself up? Like, what are the books, what are the podcasts, what are the people that you're consuming that help you grow? Anything come to mind?
I mean, there's everything's, you know, for me, seasonal, I guess. I'm not a huge reader, but I mean, I would say over the last 15 years, what I've read the most is the Bible, you know, consistently. And that's not, you know, front to back all the time. You know, that's pieces here and pieces there. I would say the Bible most consistently. And then I've read books, you know, that made big impact in my life. Freakonomics, you know, for one reason or another, you know, made a huge impact in my life. I'm not exactly sure why, but that was one book I read where I was like, I missed a train stop because I was reading it.
Huh. Just so immersed.
I was immersed, man. Yeah. I was like, economics has always kind of fascinated me, and they kind of broke it down in a way that was really intriguing. And, you know, I don't know where my opinion lies on it all, you know, right now, but that book, you know, kind of made me think about life and numbers and things a little bit differently. I read a book called What Is the What? This was on Oprah's. I flicked on Oprah at probably like 19 years old, and Oprah was talking about this book called What Is the What? And it's about, you know, in short, it's about a lottery system that gets people from Africa out of Africa on like a lottery. So you get, you know, you get drawn to, you know, to leave.
And you win the lottery to go.
Yeah.
To,
and so what is the what? So that made a huge impact in my life. Recently, I've read The Inner Game of Tennis, and that really encouraged me to kind of like have this better internal dialogue. And then the last book I think I read, and I've read this one, I've listened to and own the hard copy of this one, Legacy, the All Blacks. It's about the rugby team. And this is for business people. This is for sports, athletics. This is just a great motivating book. And
yeah.
Discipline is something that I'm really trying to lean into right now. You know, and it's, I'm really enjoying that. And I think at this age, I'm 40, I just turned 40. I think discipline is like becoming like my new, like grab onto.
Yeah. Like you're the word you're seeking to embody.
Yeah. I mean, it's the screen, you know, I'm like, it's on here, you know, it's
love
like,
it, dude.
I said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I've always been that way. My stepdad always said, do what you say you're going to do. Do what you say you're going to do.
Yeah.
And I've always been that way, but you know, with so many obligations and things as we get older, you know, it's easy to cut the corners. And like, that's really what I'm trying to kind of, I want to do exactly what I say I'm
gonna. Yes. Have you been super undisciplined in the past?
No, I mean, I'm a pretty disciplined human being. And I think anybody that makes it to the top level of what they do is a disciplined human being. But I think, you know, retiring and having the freedom and, you know, putting certain priorities ahead of others, discipline in my own health, personal well-being, et cetera, you know, may have slipped, but like, you know, I'm not going to stand you up, you know, to come to the podcast.
Yeah. Even though he wanted to, he's like, man, this run, I'm not, I could go for another run.
Well, you're talking about working out. I'm like, oh, I'll work out. I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'm down.
Yeah. That's good, man. Okay. So I want you to put your coaching hat on.
Yeah.
The game of tennis and anything else from your experience, right? I remember in freshman, sophomore year, I caught the yips. Sophomore year of college, caught the yips pretty badly. And it took me out. Like, it took me out. I transferred from Coastal Carolina to FCCU because of it. I lost my spot, made some errors in my head case. So if you have me with working through the yips, lack of confidence, lack of belief, and no help from other people at the time, how do you coach someone like me to overcome or to get through that mental block?
Well, I actually have a little bit of experience with this. My best friend and best man in my wedding was one of the best players that I played with.
Really?
Devin Ivany. This guy is my homeboy. You know, me and him are tight.
Shout out Dev.
Shout out Dev. Love you, my boy. Dev got the yips, man.
How old?
Pro ball.
Okay.
It's his story to tell, but anyway, I witnessed it happen to him. Mm-hmm. And to me, and from what I learned from him, and I've learned from other people who I know have had, it tends to fall back on some trauma in your life. You know, like there's some other traumas typically that people have gone through in their life, maybe at childhood, that, you know, is corresponding.
And it's unprocessed.
Completely unprocessed. Wow. So the first thing I would say is, now knowing what I know through this nonprofit organization that we run called Newtown Connection, and our work with the Center for Healing and Justice Through Sport, I know that rhythmic repetitive behavior has the ability to unwind some of the trauma in our lives. So
tell me more.
What I would do in a case like this with Brian Pruitt, who's, you know, a stud, but he's having a little bit of time, what I would do is I would try to get him with the basketball. I would try to get him with a lacrosse ball. I would try to get him in a scenario where it's not playing catch, but we're constantly getting the. And what happens when we got the rhythmic repetitive behavior is it mimics our mother's heartbeat. And so we get comforted. And this is a parenting hack. You know, your kid comes home from school, right? And you say, hey, how was school? Good. Oh, you know, all right, yeah. You want to give me some more? You know, how was your lunch? It was good. You know, so but now think back to your life. Think back to a time when you were on the field. You're out there and you're playing catch. You know, and the ball's going back and forth, or you're shooting hoops in the back, and your dad says, "Hey, how was school?" Oh, dad, my day was great. Wow. You know, oh man, dad. You know, the funniest thing happened. You won't believe it. You know. Or you're playing catch, that rhythmic repetitive behavior is like the lowering of the guard. And the longer you can do it, the more we can peel back some of the trauma and kind of like remove some of the fight or flight. Mm-hmm. And the way that the Center for Healing and Justice Through Sport talks about it, and Megan Bartlett is the woman's name specifically, but the way that she talks about it is like the trauma is, you know, you're walking, you know, home from school every single day, and behind one bush every single day, a bear jumps out at you, right? Well, that bear could get hauled off by the game warden and not be there for the next 5 years. But every time you walk around that bush, you're gonna think about that bear.
Right.
Well, the rhythmic repetitive behavior and breaking down some of those barriers and removing some of that, because what happens when the bear comes out, you go into fight.
Yeah.
You know, or flight, or freeze, whatever your natural, you know, I guess, state tendencies is. And you can kind of peel that back. There's tools and things to peel that back. So the yips is trauma. What happened? You had a lot of trauma built up in there, and then one bad experience, some trauma happened, it just jammed up your brain.
Yeah.
And the trauma of it, of the fight of, oh, it's gonna happen again, it's gonna happen again, is there. So you need to unwind. And I'm not a doctor, I'm just a baseball player who now is coaching, you know, you need to unwind some of the trauma, you know. Yeah. So we're going to talk about it, man. Yeah. Like, I'm going to get you, we're going to bounce the ball. I'm going to get you to talk about, you know, what happened. I want to get you to talk about the experience, because a lot of times we don't like to go back and think about what happened. We don't want to talk about it.
Right.
You know? And even before that, or before that, and before that, you know, there's a lot that's there that I'm assuming in Brian is completely guarded, and probably some stuff that nobody knows. Mm. Nobody knows. So I'm gonna get in there.
Dude, guy's a mindset ninja, Ryan. It's crazy. That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. I think back to actually full circle. Wow. So I would consider the yips a choking, right? You're at a high, high stakes environment, and you choke, essentially, right? So that's interesting, just the word, because if I think back to 8 years old, let's say, I remember eating at some restaurant with my family. I stick a big bite of chicken in my mouth, and I chew a couple times, but then try to swallow. I choke. And I end up almost passing out. I remember almost blacking out. Like, I got super dizzy. The lights almost shut off because of the lack of oxygen. Mm. Go back further, 8 years prior, I came into the world, bro, with an umbilical cord, my umbilical cord wrapped around my neck. Mm. I came out purple. My dad almost like lost his stuff. He's like, dude, my baby's purple. Is everything okay? Isn't that fascinating? Choking, coming into the world, lack of oxygen. Choking again at eight. That set me off with like panic attacks. I used to wake up at night thinking I was gonna die.
Yeah,
I would jolt up and like be in this weird, crazy fight or flight panic mode at 3 a.m. And then finally, like, it showed up in college outside of the baseball diamond, off the baseball diamond, because some personal relationships, you know, relationships were ending. There was some drama there. It didn't happen the way I would draw it up. There's just a lot there. And I started to have panic attacks again, getting sick, getting physically ill, and that all transpired at the same time.
Yeah, and so I would imagine all that played into, you know, the situation. And, you know, a lot of times, as, you know, men, young men, adults, you know, we try to compress all that stuff.
Right? Yeah.
I think now this generation of kid is more open to, you know, expressing themselves. They're far more diverse. This generation, I think, may end up being one of the stronger generations, only because they are far more open-minded, right? Open-minded to just communicating, to expressing themselves, to a lot of different things. But, you know, I grew up, you know, not wanting to tell anybody anything.
Yeah.
You know, and I still am that way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very private. You know, I don't trust anybody with, you know, my stuff.
Yeah.
I don't want you talking about me, or, you know, if I'm not there, don't talk about me.
Yeah.
That's kind of my mindset. but, you know, if you would have, you know, probably talked to somebody about that stuff along the way, these panic attacks, maybe you were holding them in. Maybe you were talking to somebody.
Right, right.
But, you know, if you would have been a little more transparent, maybe the yips would have never happened.
100%.
You know, I don't know. But, I'd love to go out and play catch with you, man.
Yeah, well, I need to. I need to heal that for sure. Because that's the thing. It took me out of the game, bro.
Yeah.
Like, it stopped me in the game. Every time I strapped the cleats on and then hit the field, from that moment, it just became I was fearful.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing in fear. I wasn't playing for fun. I was playing not to make a mistake.
Mm.
That is the worst way to play baseball. It's the worst way to live life.
Mm.
Just trying not to make a mistake.
Yeah.
As opposed to what you mentioned earlier, I'm actually successful. I'm worthy. I'm good. Regardless.
Yeah.
And working through the unraveling some of that trauma and some of those mindset glitches, if you will, but taking that approach where it's like, I'm having fun. Everything's all right. It's going to be fine either way. Like, I'm good. That is such a more, that freedom translates to better performance.
I think this book, The Legacy, I think you'd find joy in that book, man. There's a lot of mental stuff in that book, and some stuff that we talk about with our team.
I'm circling it six times.
Yeah.
I love it. So shifting gears here, because we can tap back into coaching and whatnot, but I just saw you recently, actually saw on Instagram yesterday, you hit the something with the Home Run Derby came up.
Mm-hmm.
So 40 years old, you go back to the Home Run Derby. Who are you up against? Like, tell me about that. But then more importantly, like, what do you feel as you step into the box, you know? I'm not sure how far removed from the game, but what are the feelings? Is it fear? Is it excitement? Is it joy? What is it?
I joke that, you know, coaching Little League you can't really be a dog, you know, coaching Little League. You know, yeah. And that's part of what I love the most about, you know, being a baseball player is like those moments where you gotta like really bite down. You know, like the moments where you know, it's all stacked against you. You know, yeah. Like where you gotta conquer, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, the demons, mm-hmm. you know, like that the jitterbugs or, you know, the like turning the nerves into fuel.
It's the man in the arena and
turn that. And so like, you know, once I retired, you know, the most competitive thing I was doing was coaching Little League.
Yeah.
You know, or travel ball, whatever you want to call it. Either way, both.
Not the same, is it?
Yeah. It's like, you know, I can't tell a kid like, yeah, I guess I got to tell the story. You know, my son, like, I don't know, 5 years ago, we did our first ever golf competition. Like
father, son.
No, like he signed up for junior golf.
Oh,
like
I see.
One event. I don't know what the event was called, but like the dad, one of the other, and I'm like thinking this is a friendly deal. You know, one of the other dads like, you know, corrected my son on like not marking his ball or something.
Mm.
You know, and I was pissed.
You thought this was a friendly deal.
I'm like, what? Your son's beating my son by 12 strokes. You know, why are you, what's the problem?
Yeah.
You know, and so like, I'm like, hey, you're gonna go up there and you're gonna drive this ball farther than you've ever driven. Mm. You know, like, I'm like trying to like, let's go, bro.
Let's go.
Let's go. Yeah. Which is totally the wrong thing to say as a golf coach. Yeah,
football field, great.
but I'm like, that's, you can't really do that in Little League. You can't do that, you know, with little kids. So like, in my mind, like that dog is coming out. And so when I go to these home run derbies, you know, when I go to the home run derby in general, it's like, you know, I get to kind of tap back into that competitive juice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going through my head is like, man, you can't beat me in this.
Mm. So you were stepping in the box, no matter how far removed you were from more repetitions, like in your past life, you were stepping in the box like, I'm the underdog, or I'm here to freaking step in the arena and fight and win this thing.
I think it's more like, I get to use all my tools that I built, that I really enjoy using, and I get to use those again, man.
Yeah.
That's like, that's the fun. Right. And I'm trying to tell these kids, I had this conversation with my son last night, is like, when you get to the point where the competition in here is what you're after, mm. and you're not competing with the other guy, that is really fun. That's when the game is like at its peak, and that's what I want you to experience. And that's what I want him to experience. You know, is like, that's what I love. Like, I've built these tools where I'm breathing, I'm, you know, focal point, you know, visualization, all of it that I've, you know, kind of like put into this toolbox, that toolbox just been sitting there getting rust.
Right.
You know,
it's getting
like,
some dust on
I
it.
I get to like, yeah, you know, bam, let's go, baby. You know, back to the hammer and nail.
That's dope. And it could have played out differently, but I think I saw you won.
So the Home Run Derby X is an initiative by MLB. It was created as an international game to grow the game.
Okay.
And so it's a pickleball version of baseball.
Okay.
I guess that's probably the best way to say it.
Mm.
And so they could do this as a pop-up in a field. They could do it at a festival. They could do it at a baseball field.
Got it.
It's a mini version of a home run derby. So our fence in Home Run Derby X is typically about 300 to 325, maybe a little bit farther, give or take. And the field is more narrow.
Yeah.
So where a MLB field is 90 degrees, they shrink the width of this, you know, quite a bit.
Got it.
And then there's a defensive element to it, and it's a lot faster. And they were doing it internationally, had some success. Someone had the idea like, hey, there's all these minor league stadiums, you know, that are sitting vacant, you know, when the teams are on the road trip, let's try to bring it to a small town.
Yeah.
And then they were like, okay, that worked really good. Now let's bring it to the All-Star game. Let's bring it, you know, and now it's like it's a growing phenomenon. And so who was I competing against? This last one, it was me and Ryan Zimmerman, former teammate of mine with the Nationals, and Allie Newland, Newland.
Okay.
Sorry, Allie. we were on a team against like Adrian Gonzalez, Johnny Gomes was in it, Nick Swisher's in it. Mm. So basically, if you're a retired player and still have the ability to go out and swing for 5 minutes without hurting yourself, you can come and be involved.
Dope.
You know, like I've competed against Andrew Jones, Ryan Klesko was in it, who's like Manny Ramirez was in it.
Wow.
But they do a bunch of them. You know, and it's like, you know, certain fields. You know, I just did one. That one that you saw was in Salt Lake.
Okay.
Did one at the All-Star game in Georgia. Mm-hmm. Did one in Albuquerque. So they're kind of just popping up. And it's a new thing. I think maybe, without being said, I think they want to kind of rival the banana ball.
All right. Thanks for watching real quick. Wanted to tap in to the official sponsor of the podcast, Built Basics. I'm currently wearing their Rome Knit hoodie. This is the most comfortable hoodie I wear. It's buttery soft, flexible, versatile. I can work out in it. I can also just chill at the house after the day and feel super comfy. So this podcast is sponsored by them. If you want to check it out, go shop for some styles. Get yourself some gear. I'll link it in the show notes below. Built.com, 30% off site-wide for the holidays. All right, let's get back to the episode.
Oh, there are some definite characters. I mean, Nick Swisher, this dude is on full tilt his whole life.
All day long.
You see it on TV and it's like, oh my gosh, man. Like, how does this guy do it, man?
Yeah.
But he is a character. He's probably the most unique human being out there in the whole Home Run Derby X.
Funny guy.
Funny, super funny dude. Always, like I said, always on. Which is like the opposite of me. You know, mm-hmm. I'm trying to be like, you know.
Yeah, it's meditative.
You know, and so it's cool to see that, you know, but it's also cool to go home back in my own little bubble. Johnny Gomes is a good dude, man. Mm-hmm. Johnny Gomes and I were teammates. I love his energy. Johnny's a super good human being.
What's his energy like?
His energy is like, been there, done that. You know, he's flatlined in his life, like legit flatlined a couple times.
Like dead?
Dead.
Wow.
Like, and he's
couple
like,
times?
Yeah. And he'll tell you, like, dude, I've died. You know, I'm good. Like, I'm not worried, you know.
Whoa.
And so Johnny is a unique human being in the sense that, like, he can bring a room together like nobody else.
Mm.
And that's why he's got a couple World Series championships, and that's why teams forever were bringing him in to kind of change the culture and be a culture shifter.
Wow.
And I think that's why now still, like, you know, he gets invited to do all these speaking engagements and to be part of just organizations.
Yeah. So when you say he brings a room together, what does he do specifically? Like, what do you think that he does that make him so charismatic or a leader or energy builder?
I've always noticed, like, he has no fear in calling out, like, the inevitable or the obvious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he will be blatantly, almost offensively
honest. Yeah.
And I think people gravitate towards that. People want that. I want that. Like, mm-hmm. I want you to be completely honest with me. And people, for a lot, especially at the top, you know, there's a lot of yes people.
Yes, man. I was going to say.
There's a lot of people that tell you what you want to hear.
I'm sure.
And when someone is honest and, like, straightforward, you know, it pushes us to be better.
Hmm.
I'm begging for people to tell me the honest opinion of me so I can be better. And I think Johnny does a good job of that. I think Johnny is also, I don't know the word, but, like, he points out appreciate. Like, he gives appreciation to everybody.
Yeah.
Like, he's one of those guys that will thank, you know, the person holding the door in a speech, you know, or the small people. And I think that really is appealing. But overall, he's got good energy. He's always turned on. He's honest. And I think those are a couple of, like, the key characteristics. You know, honesty goes a long way.
I mean, that's such a profound, I love that you shared, like, the, I think, balance of that. Because if you just have one, like, that's good. Like, it's always good to tell the truth, especially in the right way. But when you balance that with encouraging or giving people their flowers or honoring someone intentionally, that's just magic.
Yeah.
When you can tell people the truth for their betterment and their growth so they can unlock their potential plus see the good and call it out, dude, that's everything.
Yeah.
No I doubt. Want more Johnny Gomes in my life.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know what I'm saying? So that's huge. I try to be an encourager like that. That's why I ask in specific actions. You know, I think that's amazing. So what do you think, getting back into the game, you know, MLB, your career, what do you think playing ball at the highest level in the show taught you about yourself? Like, what do you think it revealed about who you are, you think?
I think where I stand right now, and if I could go back to my 12-year-old self, I would tell myself to dream bigger.
Whoa.
You know, that's kind of where I'm at right now. I wish I would have dreamed bigger, you know, because growing up in my house, we were not allowed to say can't. Can't was, you know, that was foul language.
It's a curse word.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's a C word.
Yeah. That was not, I mean, it was shunned.
Yeah. And you had how many siblings? Sorry.
There was four of us that grew up in the house.
Nice.
And so, you know, my dream was to play 10 years in the big leagues and to be able to retire my mom.
Nice.
And to have kids, yeah. You know, the kids, I remember Andrew Jones, I grew up a Braves fan, and Andrew Jones, they mentioned, you know, in one broadcast that he had four or five kids. And I was like, I want four or five kids.
Yeah.
You know, I want to play 10 years because that's like the golden number. I'm going to play 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I heard that somebody retired their mom, and I was like, dang, that's a good idea. I want to do that too. Yeah. And from when I was 12 years old, every birthday, every time it was the clock was 11:11, every time there was an opportunity to make a wish, I was wishing I could be a Major League Baseball player every single time until I was 23 years old.
Wow.
And there was a couple times in there, you know, where, you know, the wish was for a family member or something else. But I mean, man, this was on my mind in every action, every single thing I did from 12 until 23, and then from 23 to, you know, 35, you know, when, you know, and now I'm 40 and trying to find that next thing. But
wow.
But yeah, man, it was I wish I would have dreamed bigger. I wish I would have dreamed to play. Well, maybe I don't, you know, now that I'm sitting here saying that, because, you know, just as bad as I wanted to be a big leaguer, I wanted to be a good dad, and I wanted to be a dad also. And so now I got that life.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to be the best at that. So, you know, the dream thing, I think, is something that's resonated with me. Like, yeah. Dream big, man.
Yeah.
Dream all the way.
Yeah. I need some of that in my life, bro. That is super motivating, because I think that's real. I think a lot of people would resonate with, like, I don't think people have problems dreaming too big. You know, I think if anything, we probably settle for like more realistic stuff when life kind of hits us and whatnot. But if we found ourselves like you looking back, man, like you should set your vision higher. Mm-hmm. You should set your goals higher. Don't sacrifice the goal because your habits suck. Mm-hmm. Change your habits to reflect the goal and then elevate the goal more. You know, yeah. It's like you said, human being, human spirit, capable of everything, limitless in its potential. So I need more of that.
It's in you, man.
Yeah, I need more of that. And you said too, that seed thing, which is really powerful when you were getting at that at the beginning. That's part of what I live my life by. Three mindsets. God is for me. He's for my highest good. So life's happening for me. Not just for me, but for my highest good. So the highest possible dream, highest possible good. And then everything I need is already within me.
Yeah.
And when I know that, it gives me that confidence where, like, I'm already good. God gave me everything I need to become everything he intended. And I don't need to go to the store and get more courage. I need to take the step forward when I feel the fear, to flex the courage muscle and feel that grow, because it's already there.
Yeah. You gotta grow it.
Yeah. That's powerful. So that's really cool. I think the follow-up question for me, as someone who, similar to you, I think you got me on the wishes, by the way, 11:11, every birthday. So I think that's really cool. I also want to maybe tap into this idea of, like, do you believe in, like, that manifesting your future or being a part of your trajectory, and, like, how that is different than, let's say, like, prayer, just the overall.
Yeah, I certainly make this very clear.
Yeah.
I certainly don't believe that wishing got me there.
Yeah.
I think that having my mind set on a goal and accomplishing the goal, it looked different, but I certainly do believe now, and without doubt, believe that, you know, like I talked about when I walk into the clubhouse and I ask the Lord to use me here for your glory. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that this is all his doing, and he's led me exactly down the path that he wants me to be, be right here, right now, talking to you and, you know, doing this life, man. And I don't think that wishing got me there.
Amen, bro. I don't think so either.
No.
I do think the power of the mind focused on a goal and focused on a process or focused on whatever is huge. We talked about it. Where focus goes, energy flows. If I focus on, don't spike this ball, Brian, don't make the mistake, you're trying to not think of a pink elephant.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not how the human brain works. Don't hang this curveball.
Right.
You know, when you got three ball, whatever it is.
Right.
Don't do this is equivalent to thinking about doing it.
No doubt.
So, but identity and, like, worthiness, I think, like, real quick, I just want to hear your thoughts on this, because someone similar to you, maybe with a little bit less natural ability and talent, but similar goals. I'm like, I want to be in the show. I want to be a ball player. Like, that was always the goal. That was always the dream. After I kind of chose my baseball path in high school. But I always want to be a professional athlete. Mm. So I always imagined, like, when I got to that point of the peak of my career in the show playing ball, I would finally be like worthy. Mm. I finally be like, dang, I'm enough now. Mm-hmm. That's at least what you'd think growing up. So how was that like for you? I mean, at the peak of your career, let's say, did that, like, what did that reveal about who you were, like, inherently as your identity?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, you 12 years old, I want to play in the big leagues. 23 years old, I make it to the big leagues. And then this guy named Tim Pearson comes in my life. Simultaneously with a couple other guys, Adam LaRoche mainly, but a couple others. So Tim Pearson is the team chaplain for the Washington Nationals. And Tim starts coming in on Sundays, and he's like, hey, man, you coming to chapel? You know, I had a little bit of background. I went to Catholic school until fifth grade, and then, you know, baseball started to come in. I stopped going to church.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, 22 years old, 23 years old. Tim Pearson's coming to my locker on Sundays saying, hey, man, come to chapel. I'm going, dude, I got a game. I got a game in, you know, at 1 o'clock. You know, and you're in my locker at 8 asking me to go to chapel. Like, dude, I got to get ready for this game.
Right.
No chance. Under the premise, like, Fortune 500 companies, you know, don't just stop their workday to go do church.
Right.
You know, to go talk about God. Like, right. Dude, I'm busy, you know. So, no, you know. Next week, next year, you know, he's like, hey, Ian, you coming to chapel? You know, and like, simultaneously, I'm starting to get like unfulfilled. You know, I made it to the big leagues. Okay, that's not enough. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be a shortstop. You know, at the time when I got called up, I was kind of playing a little bit of second base. No, I want to be a shortstop. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I want to be an all-star. And then I want to get a contract. You know, da-da-da-da-da-da. It's never, there's no contentment.
Yeah.
So he's asking me, you know, come to chapel. I'm not really feeling fulfilled in the dream that I had. Now I need more. I'm trying to find like this band-aid for the hole, the void, you know, through all different kinds of crap, you know. And so Tim just keeps, you know, water dropping on my forehead, man. Like, come on, you coming? And man, we ended the season. So Liz, Tim's wife, had been, you know, equally working on Chelsea, my wife, you know, and Chelsea.
And you guys are married at the time.
Yeah. And Chelsea's like, you know, diving into this Christianity thing. She didn't really grow up with it in her background. Mm-hmm. She's trying to explore it. You know, so one day in Washington National Stadium, during the day, you know, this is like a night game. So we're there, you know, 12, 1 o'clock. Chelsea is doing a Bible study with the players and their wives.
Mm-hmm.
She's in there, and I'm in the clubhouse.
Mm.
What a jerk. Like, she wanted me to go. I'm like, no, I'm not going.
Bad game? Or you're just like, nah.
Like, I'm not doing it. Yeah. You know, like, I'm here for baseball.
Yeah.
You know, that's the mindset. I wanted to be that dog. You know, I wanted to be locked in. I wanted to just kill the other guy.
Yeah.
And there's no time for lovey-dovey Jesus, you know, in the middle of this workday.
Right.
And so Chelsea's in there. You know, an earthquake in Washington, D.C. comes.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, we're getting bombed. You know, my wife is in there. Like, what do I do? You know, like, I'm like looking for shelter simultaneously, like going like, dang, I gotta go with my wife. She's in there doing church and I'm in here doing nothing, you know?
And bracing so, for impact.
And so, man, like these things kept on happening. We're like, she's going after it and I'm being a turd.
Wow.
And we go home, we about to have our son. We have our son, we find a church. I start kind of coming around to the idea of like, you know, restoring faith, and you know, God is certainly working in me. So then during that spring training, Adam LaRoche, you know, is a big time believer. And he's like doing like Bible studies.
Is he old? He's older than you?
He's older than me. Yeah. He's older than me. Adam LaRoche is, you know, he also retired early, kind of like I did, walked away from, you know, a significant amount of money on principle and just on ready to move on with his life. But in his faith, he was a mentor. He was a mentor to me.
Love
so it. He starts having spring training, Bible studies. I'm going. Tim is, you know, happy to see me. Things are going good. My faith is getting stronger. You know, I'm reading the Bible every day. Things are going good. Well, that year, 2012, about to, I made the All-Star team, but 2 weeks prior, you know, I'm playing through an oblique strain. You know, my oblique is like shredded, you know, but I'm still playing, you know, I'm still trying to like dog it out, you know, hour and a half of treatment every day. Sunday comes around, Tim comes to my locker. Up to this point, I've been going to all the Bible studies. You know, life is changing, man. You know, so Tim comes to my locker and he says, "Hey, Ian, you coming to Bible study today?" And I was like, "Man, Tim, I can't today. You know, I got to go get this treatment. You know, it's taking me a long time." And he's like, "All right, cool." He's completely understanding, just like every other time. He walks away. I go to the training room. I'm in the training room. I got the heat pack on me. And I'm in there and I'm like overcome. Dude, I'm like, this is not where you belong. You know, what are you doing? Go back to chapel. So I go into the chapel room and sit next to Tim. And dude, I'm just lit up. Like goosebumps, like feeling this like emotion. And at that point, I was like, man, Ian, this is the first time in your life I've put something over baseball.
Wow.
From when I was 12 years old. Because when I tell you I was obsessed with baseball from 12 to that day, there is no way at any point in my life I would have put anything over baseball. If I had a broken arm, I would go to practice. If I, you know, no matter what, that was what I was into. I'm going to baseball. And this is the first time where I said, you know what? If I can't play this game because I got to go to chapel, God, so be it.
Wow.
You know, and that was like, boom, guard down. You know, baseball was not this idol in my life anymore. There was this new thing in my life that was just so important. Their freedom came to me on the field. You know, I really started to kind of just get out there and just play free. You know, I was released from this burden of like baseball, more of like, hey, you know, give them some glory, man. Like, play it a different way. Play with integrity. Play with this, you know, new moral compass. And man, the game changed. I made the All-Star game, won a Silver Slugger that year. Wow. You know, contract came shortly thereafter, you know, and then, you know, after that, it was the battle of like, okay, how do I, you know, fight off this lordship to baseball and like keep God at the center? And that's, you know, the battle that we walk.
Whoa. That's a freaking great story,
yeah, man.
It's
pretty wild.
So it happened through surrender. Like that moment, it seems like you basically just said, you know, you kind of surrendered or released this idea of like baseball being king in your life. Like yeah, everything, instead of like just being like something that you do.
Yeah, it was just like, it was part of who I do, but not who I am.
Yeah.
You know, whereas before it was who I am, I was a baseball player.
Yeah.
You know, and I was the baseball player that I wanted to be, that I drew up, that I imagined. And going forward, it was like, man, like I'm yours, you know, do with me what you want.
So good. So two questions. What did like success in baseball not give you that you thought it would? And then I have a follow-up question on that, but I'm just curious from, because you literally just, you dreamed, you worked your butt off, you freaking did everything you wanted to do, and you're living your dream. But I mean, you mentioned like it just wasn't.
Yeah,
it wasn't,
I think fulfilling. I think the number one thing, and I think nothing in this world can provide it, is contentment. You know, when I'm at my best, I'm praying for contentment, because I think that's where joy lies.
Wow.
You know, and you know, baseball and nothing else has ever made me feel content. And you know, I remember, you know, when the time came for me to make the decision to kind of step away, one of the key factors is, you know, I was playing on a big contract in Colorado. You know, part of that contract is getting a suite, you know, in the hotel, you know, so like rooms in the best hotels in the cities that you could not imagine. You know, they're unbelievable, gorgeous rooms. So I'm in Seattle, I'm in a suite, and I walk in late one night and I put my stuff down. My wife and kids are at home, not at home like Denver, like they're at home in Florida, I think. And, you know, this like empty, just like, man, what are you doing?
Wow.
You know, emotion, like, you got all this. Look at this. I'm looking around.
Best view.
Suite, best view, the electric curtains, you know, king bed overlooking Seattle. It was sick. And I'm like, empty.
Wow.
You know? And I was like, this isn't the life I'm meant to be having. You know, and like, I could have all this stuff and there's no contentment. I want to go home. You know, I'm ready. Then that's when the questions of like, you know, when do you know you're ready to retire started coming into my head. And, you know, from there, COVID, and it was like, you know, just the script had been written, you know, that I was going to sail off into the sunset, you know, and just go be with my family.
Dude, so powerful to hear it firsthand too. Like that's incredible. Now, when you, because the question I have that comes to mind after you say that is this idea you've heard about the Statue of David and Michelangelo.
Yeah, man, I love it.
So that idea, addition by subtraction, mm-hmm. is really powerful. So the question would be, when you walked away from baseball, what did you gain from walking away or leaving a good thing?
Dude, I mean, a million things happened. A lot of great things happened, but like one thing that sticks out in the second that you ask that question is, I got to coach fall Little League baseball with my oldest son, my middle son, my youngest son, all on the same team, and we won the championship. And my older son, was pitching to my younger son, or my younger son was pitching to my older son, and my youngest son was playing second base. Okay. So they were all on the field, all in the middle of the field, win the championship, they're on defense, they all run to each other, and then they all run to me, and we all hug on the field. And I mean, dude, there's not a dollar amount that you could put on that would make me feel like that was the right thing, the wrong place to be.
Wow.
You know, so that was like the moment. And then getting to raise my kids and getting to be, you know, dad, and I mean, all the things I've got to see, you know. One thing that happened shortly after I retired during COVID was my wife had a baby. It was the most magical birth that you could ever imagine.
How so? I mean,
man, dude, I can't even.
Just a list.
The doctor who is a doctor in this town, who has been a doctor in this town and probably delivered half of Sarasota, said she's never witnessed a birth like that.
Mm.
Dude, so it was amazing, man. So Ali Kosky is a yoga instructor.
Okay.
In town. One off season, I came home.
I know Ali, blonde.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she was a co-owner at one point of Yoga Shack.
Yes. Yeah.
And so Ali was giving me yoga instruction. You know, I did a private 75-minute session with Ali every single day, mm-hmm. 5 days a week for one whole off season.
Love
so
it.
I've got hours and hours and hours of, you know, just listening to Ali and like just connecting, right? And so the mind, like my mind through Allie and through her like mentorship, you know, can like, I guess like connect.
Yeah.
In that moment of my wife's childbirth, my wife and I were so connected that I felt like I could help her relieve the pain wherever she was having it. So
really?
Like, you know, she delivered this baby with no epidural, no pain medicine, completely under control, without flinching, flexing. I mean, it was like she was completely at peace. And she delivered this baby, and I was right there, like breathing with her, you know, talking her through it. I mean, the connection that we had in that moment, like, is absolutely godsend.
Whoa.
You know, simultaneously, we've known each other since we're 10 years old. We were married and like best friends. Like, I mean, so this was all like, the Little League thing, the childbirth, you know, it was just like, holy, you know, this is unbelievable.
Would those two things have happened when you were on the road playing ball?
Certainly not, because the conversations that we had leading up, you know, like she was saying, oh, my neck hurts. And I would be like, okay, you know, like, look, close your eyes, you know, breathe, you know, like breathe to the center of it, breathe to where you feel it. Things, all that Ali kind of had equipped me with, you know, we're doing this in the car on like a random, you know, neck pain, you know, and so that was like let up. You know, I would certainly not have been there to be able to coach my kids I'm, you know, out playing. And a million other things, dude. Like my life now is far greater than my life in the big leagues.
Far, far more rich. It
just
sounds
greater
like,
in every greater in every element. Yes. Yeah. Do I miss the personal gratification of using my toolbox?
Yeah.
But I get to equip other people with tools, and that to me is 1,000 times better.
How so? Like, okay, let's talk about that, because I think that's huge. I mean, if there's anything more impressive than doing it yourself, is teaching and equipping other people to do the same. So yeah, I mean, how do you, what's your coaching philosophy, if you had to distill it? Like, based on your experience and how you approach coaching, like, what do you think your coaching philosophy is?
I think my coaching philosophy is, I want to care so much about you that you know that what I'm saying is coming from a good place, and you'll genuinely receive it. And you receive it for the betterment of yourself and for the team. You know, I think that is like the essence of leadership, like this servant leadership, like going back to even to like how Jesus was a leader, you know, like he's washing feet, you know, I want to be that, mm-hmm. you know, I want to be, you know, this humble servant to my players, but also provide them with a little bit of discipline and accountability to their actions mm-hmm. so that they can see the benefit of their work.
Love that. It's a good balance. The truth.
I want them to work for me mm-hmm. because they care about me, not because I'm forcing them to do
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to be a dictator.
That's exactly right. I mean, I don't do works on earth because God says I have to.
Mm-hmm.
I do works on earth because God is such a great God and he loves me and his example, and I want to get to know him more. And the more I get to know him, the more it pours out of me to do good things for other people.
Yeah.
I want these kids to just get to know me so much and get to know, you know, how much I care about them so that, you know, they go out there and they play their best. And when they play their best, they become free and they get to go out there and express themselves
yeah.
to the full, you know, oomph mm-hmm. of their ability.
And what an opportunity too to learn from someone like you as a player. I mean, you bring with you like a wealth of knowledge and expertise and just all the stuff you've even, like when you answered the yips question, like I never even thought that you would bring that up. Like that's crazy. And that's real. So,
I mean, I've got a really good staff, you know, we've got three major leaguers on our staff,
huge.
At Lakewood Ranch High School.
Yeah.
And then a couple other really important and good coaches. So it's certainly not just me.
Yeah.
But the kids are in good hands.
Yeah.
And I think they feel that and appreciate that. And they're getting after it, dude.
Yeah. I love it, bro. What do you think your superpower is as a coach or as a human?
I think my superpower as a human is I think I have a really good ability of feeling and like an intuition of someone else's state.
Hmm. Has that always been the case?
Maybe. I don't know.
Pretty intuitive person.
I remember a specific time where, you know, we used to go to work with my mom, and my mom was a hairdresser, and she used to work over by the mall and like the Sarasota Square Mall. Mm-hmm. And so you got like the mall over there, you got Target back over there. Mm-hmm. And I remember one time, like, you know, I just for some reason just went and bought my mom flowers and like just brought them mm-hmm. back to her desk and just put them on her, you know, her station at work.
Yeah.
And like, just like the radiance that came from her, like it just, I remember it feeling like she needed that so bad. And like my 12 or 13 year old intuition said that, and you know, it just like shifted. I don't know. I think I've always just tried to just connect with people and just try to like, just, I think I can feel compassion. Maybe I have compassion.
Yeah.
That my superpower might be compassion.
Empathy. Compassion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have you read The Genius of Jesus? It's a mm-hmm. book. Irwin McManus is a preacher out in Hollywood.
Okay.
Big fan of him and his, just the way he kind of talks and teaches and communicates. And he said like, yeah, empathy. I think it was in that book, empathy is the highest form of consciousness, mm. something like that. To that essence where it's like, when I have the ability to get out of my head, my experience, my life, and put myself in someone else's shoes and think, what would I want if I was them? Or what would I need if I was them? Or how could I serve them in the best way possible? It is a superpower. That's huge. I mean, if the world had more men like yourself and guys who were trying to, men and women, trying to like be that empathetic and intuitive type of person, the world would be such a better place. We'd have close to heaven on earth if we all just kind of saw each other from that light. Mm. As opposed to, I don't care, you know what I'm saying? Like the Facebook level rants and stuff, like the craziness out there.
Yeah.
So how do you develop intuition? If that's your superpower, what are the actions and things you're doing that make you able to develop that skill, that power you have?
I mean, I think less of yourself and think more of other people is like the simplest form of that.
It's great.
You know, but I think, and my wife, if she listens to this, you know, we'll say,
she hears you talk enough.
She's like, hey, what about me? you know. And I think one flaw that comes with that is like I'm always trying to serve other people that sometimes I neglect the people that are closest to me, man. Including myself.
Man.
You know, and so I heard it said one time where like, you know, you don't worry about the people that are closest to you. You know, I know my wife loves me. You know, we've known each other since we're 10 years old. We've got this great, you know, great family. You know, we have so many ties together that sometimes I feel like, oh, she's not going anywhere.
Right.
You know, I'll worry about every other person except her. And, you know, so that comes with, you know, a price tag.
Yeah.
But I think caring about other people is how you develop. Caring about other people more than you're worried about your own selflessness.
It's good. We at my summit this past weekend did a practice during the second session. So I talked about identity and unbecoming everything we're not, letting go of the roles and, you know, baseball player and important and whatever it may be, right? Mm-hmm. That's by definition, you're becoming more of who you are because it's you're tapping into like who you are in your essence. And then second was becoming, okay, now that you stripped it down to like the essence and the core of who you are, I'm a child of God, I'm loved, mm-hmm. that's who I am. Now I can work from that place of already being enough and then like work toward excellence, work toward empathy, developing strengths. And we kind of did this, it wasn't impromptu, I planned it. I wanted the guys to speak from the end of their life. So I said, we're all gonna die one day. We all had our first breath, we're all gonna have our last breath. Hmm. What we do in the middle is everything. But that last breath is a guarantee. And I think if I'm familiar with that and in tune with that, I'm gonna die one day. It supercharges my entire day with meaning. Mm. I'm more present with Gianna. I'm more loving to Gigi. I'm more playful, more of a kid, whatever it may be. So I had them write their eulogy. Mm. I had them take a step back and say, you can think about whoever you want, would be at your funeral, could be your spouse, could be your kids, could be anybody, right? Parents. I want you to think about the type of man that they're gonna look back on and what words do they say? What feelings come up? Mm. And I kind of break.
It's deep, bro.
It's deep. I can feel it in the room right now. So it's deep, right? And I'm like, this is deep and we're getting into it. And so I get a text from Dustin, my right-hand man. He goes, do you have one that you can share? And I was like, I'm like, no, I don't, but I could see, I'll write one right now. Take a deep breath. And then I immediately just transported into that moment. And I was looking at my life through Gigi's eyes. Mm. And I started writing. Mm. And bro, it's when I tell you the emotions start coming out, start crying in front of the whole group.
Sure.
Start crying. And so much of that is because of gratitude and love. But so much of that, dude, Ian, if I'm gonna be honest, is like how many days I missed the mark on that. I'm not gonna pull it up, but I can think about it. It's like, Gigi said, you were my best friend. Mm. You loved me at my worst. Mm. You kept saying yes when you didn't have to. Mm. You looked me deep in the eyes. You tried your best to speak my love language, even though you still didn't clean up after yourself half the time and the trash is late and this and that. But I started getting emotional because I'm like, dang, I missed that so many times. So I think that practice was so therapeutic because the reality is I get to go back home today and go live the dream from the end backwards.
Right.
And it's like, man, you were the best dad for your kids, this and that. So I'm just rambling at this point, talking a lot, but I think that was so powerful for me to put myself in her shoes and to live with that end in mind. How do I want to be remembered? Mm. You know? And I forget how we got off that tangent, but...
That was pretty powerful, dude. That's a great perspective. I've actually, my biological dad died when I was 18 months old. Mm. He was 46. He died of a heart attack, and you know, part of me has for a long time planned my death at 46. You know, like I have a goal. I'm 40 now.
Wow.
I want to live past 46 years old. You know, like I want to beat. You know, my first goal was to be a dad longer than my dad was. Wow. Well, I got past that. Yeah. You know, these, I don't verbalize these, you know, a lot, but like, you know, I want to live past 46, you know, but I've lived and I have like this desire to turn over every stone.
Yeah.
you know, before I'm 46. You know, I want to learn all this stuff. You know, time's running out. You know, like, you got a couple motorcycles, you know, because, I, you know, if I die at 46, I want to say I rode a motorcycle in my life. You know, so now I'm riding a motorcycle. You know, like, you name it. I want to unturn it, you know, and I want to do it, you know, relatively soon because time's running out.
No time like the present.
Yeah.
Yeah, carpe diem. I think that's a beautiful way to live life, too, is it's always now. You know, it's like, this is life right now. Mm. And in this moment, you talk about like breath work and meditation and stuff you learned from Allie, right? Mm-hmm. She's awesome. And just that whole dynamic, I mean, the breath. I talked to a buddy this morning named Lance. He came to my summit too. Shout out Lance. But the breath is such a powerful thing. I mean, we have no idea. Like, I'm silly. You talk about like not being the smartest guy in the room. Me talking about breath is powerful is like the understatement of the century. But one of the cool things, I mean, one of the many cool things is like breath is always happening now. Mm. You can't breathe in the past. You can't breathe in the present. Yeah. And spirit, pneuma, it's like God's breath in your lungs too. There's so many fascinating parts about that. But I think for me, that is how I kind of settle in and enjoy those moments and really be present with my family just by syncing up to the breath, breathing in the moment before it's gone.
That's exactly right.
You know? All right. That was a... That was an awesome tangent. I love that. I wasn't planning on sharing the eulogy, but I forget how we got off on that. But we talked about you walking away from the game. I loved how you shared that. It doesn't seem like there's any regrets.
No, not at all. No.
It seems like it was confirmation.
Yeah.
Which is beautiful. So God is great always, but that's just amazing that you had that confirmation. So talk to me about the what you're doing now. So let's just like kind of think about this last bit of the discussion and conversation on community and like work that you're doing in the community and also like just relationships in your life. And we talked about fellowship out there. What made you get into, what made you even start or get involved with like Newtown Connection? Because you're doing powerful stuff there, but why was that on your heart?
Newtown Connection was born out of a desire to give back to my community. For my career, throughout my career, going back even to the minor leagues, I was always, you know, giving back to people, you know, and their, you know, philanthropic ventures.
Yeah.
You know, whether that be a camp that was hosted by the team, whether that was, you know, a buddy asking me to go to a golf tournament, you know, whatever it was, I was always saying yes to everybody else's stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, and so much so that throughout my career, I was nominated for the Roberto Clemente Award, you know, several times over. But when I would come, which is a philanthropic, you know, award based on Roberto Clemente's death, you know, in service, in action.
Yeah.
And so when I would come home, you know, I would go into like this, you know, turtle shell where like, giving everybody else, giving myself as a baseball player, giving myself off the field, you know, signing autographs, being a good human being. When I come home, I don't want you to talk to me. I don't want you to see me.
Yep.
Let me recharge and then let me get out. Well, COVID comes, you know, simultaneously George Floyd's going on. I'm dealing with, you know, the emotions of like possibly retiring. And like, I'm realizing, man, apart from a couple camps, I've not done anything in my own community. Mm. Newtown Connection is born. And we could go long into that, short into that, but the basis of it is my neighbor, Vince Northfield, ex-business executive, mentor of mine, friend. One day, I had just got an Apple Watch, and this is after I set up an appointment, you know, with him, you know, to say, this is how Vince is, I set up an appointment with him to meet at his house.
Yeah.
So, you know, I roll up, I got this Apple Watch. He's got like, think about like a big whiteboard, but like with the sheet, like the blank sheets that flip, you know, and he's got that pulled out on his kitchen table. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, this guy's legit. You know? And I knew he was legit. You know, he's driving like a $500,000 car.
Yeah.
You know, he's legit.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden my watch, you know, I don't know anything. I'm not the technology guy. I don't know anything about this Apple Watch. It starts going off over and over again. And he's like, are you going to take this serious or not? You know, and I was like, dang. I took the watch off and put it in my pocket and was like, let's go.
Dang.
You know, like, this is the type of person that I want in my life. Like, he's about to fire me up.
Yeah.
And so from that moment forward, man, we've, for the last 5 years, have been building Newtown Connection.
Mm.
And Newtown Connection is a program that we look for existing programs in the community and we enhance them through sports, health, and education for the betterment of the Newtown community and the youth of Newtown. We work with partners, programs that operate at the highest standard, and we try to give them to the kids of Newtown who otherwise, you know, wouldn't have the exposure to them.
Yeah. So, dude, that's incredible hearing too. Like, it just shows your heart, like you're willing to invest in different people, different things, friend of a friend, favor here and there. But like, yeah, I got to imagine you getting to like really go deep and give more in your hometown. That's probably a wildly fulfilling feeling.
It is, man. But philanthropy, I think anybody that does it would agree, leaves this feeling in you like it's not enough. Like, there's always more. Like, man, we could do more. We could do more. We can do more. So I struggle with, like, being satisfied.
Yeah.
Going back to contentment. I struggle with being satisfied that we're doing enough. Mm-hmm. But man, we've been able to provide some really cool things to the kids that we serve.
That's good, man.
Yeah.
Follow-up question, but I know Ryan would enjoy this. There's like this Zen story that I'm sure Ali probably has used in like a yoga meditation. And it's a great reminder, especially what you said. So there's two guys walking on the beach. One's a, let's say a monk, and the other is a student, and he's picking up the sea turtles, let's say, or the sea starfish, right? Have you heard this?
Maybe. Keep going.
Maybe. So he picks up one of them, throws it in the ocean. Like they're struggling to get back to the ocean, right? So he picks one up, throws it, picks one up, throws it again. And the student looks up and he's like, dude, there's thousands. There's thousands. Like, so we're gonna do this forever or what? So eventually he asks, like, okay, why are we doing this? Like, you can't save all these starfish. Like, why are you just saving 10 or 100 out of a million? And the monk turns to the student and says, well, I can't save all of them, but I mean, go ask the starfish I just saved, like how he feels, what he thinks. And it's that powerful reminder that like, we can't touch every single person on the planet. You know, we can't touch every single person, but that one person, that's enough. That one life that you saved, that one life that you encouraged, and you got him to think a certain way, or you just encouraged him on a day where maybe he was just ready to do something stupid or throw it all away or whatever it is. You and your team have the ability to change that dude or that girl's life forever.
One is enough.
One's enough.
Yeah.
And you do that as many times as possible.
Yeah.
God willing, as many times and as many days as possible, but there's a limit to that. And there's that surrender piece where it's like, okay, I trust God. I'm going to be faithful and consistent, but
One's enough, man.
One's enough.
We set out, you know, in Newtown Connection, and like part of what we created and have is like a blueprint for professional athletes.
That's sick.
To do what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know, part of Vince, you know, in his background, you know, he has educated me on due diligence. Mm-hmm. And in our due diligence, we found that like 85% of professional athletes, entertainers that start 501c3s or nonprofits fail.
Like how many?
85%.
Dang.
You know, so like you talk about the greats, you know, like Russell Wilson, for all his, you know, his heart and glory and everything else, Super Bowl champion, like he's done. He's failed.
Why?
Alex Rodriguez, you know, there's ESPN articles written about these guys and other athletes with 501c3 compliance issues. You know, you couldn't read all of them.
Yeah.
And so part of what we wanted to do is create this thing so it's sustainable.
Yeah.
It's repeatable. Mm-hmm. And we have, and this program is pretty sick. It does a lot of good, and it does it in a fairly easy and compliant way. And we're pretty proud of Newtown Connection.
So is there a separate name for the blueprint, or is it just the Newtown Connection?
It's not. It is the blueprint. Yeah, Newtown Connection is the blueprint.
Because you mentioned another thing. You said Newtown Connection and something else within the conversation of charity or communal. Yeah, I'll figure out
what happens when I just talk and I forget what I said.
Yeah, same, dude. I don't even know what I said this morning. But that's good. So real quick, Vince, your mentor, one of your mentors at least, what do you think, like what does he bring to the table for you? You mentioned like that, hey, let's take this, are you going to take this seriously or what? Mm-hmm. Like what is it about him that you are like, I need to surround myself with this guy?
Vince has showed me a level of structure and discipline that I never could have imagined. You know, I come from in my profession, I came from more of like an artistic, culture first, do what's best for the team, mm-hmm. Kind of flexible,
free flowing, yeah.
And he comes from a world of he does the same exact thing every single day, same exact time, you know, tracks everything,
yeah,
you know. It's insane. You know, I recently were neighbors and, you know, we live out in the country. So, you know, we have septic tanks and every once in a while you got to get your septic tank drained.
Yeah.
And so 5 years ago we did it and we'd happen to do it on the same day. So like a couple of weeks ago, I hit Vince up and said, hey, you know, do you remember the company that we used? And he texted me back like, yeah, it was this company and it was about 10:26 a.m. when they came.
Wild.
You know, and I don't know if he was being serious or not, but I feel like it was 10:26 when it happened. And it wouldn't surprise me. I would say that's more likely that it was 10:26 than unlikely.
Attention to detail.
Attention to detail is insane.
Yeah.
And standards are non-wavering. Mm. You know, like we will operate at the highest standard or we will not operate.
Wow.
You know, and so he's definitely showed me that.
Yeah.
But there's a rigidity to it. You know, and I love Vince, but there's a rigidity to it that I don't think is healthy for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't fit into like my faith.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we balance each other in that way, whether he would say that or not. But I think there's, you know, some compassion that maybe I've showed and maybe impressed on him, where like the rigidity has helped me and structure gave me some structure.
Yeah.
Maybe I've kind of, you know, softened him up because I, you know, jokingly call him Charmin because, you know, at first he was like, you know, in his line of business, he was the guy that would come in and like start, he would go and like fire everybody, bring his team in.
Clean house.
Build the company back up, sell it.
Yeah.
You know, build the company back up, make it this big juggernaut and move on.
Yeah.
You know, so he had no problem like,
just ruthlessly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so now he's like, you know, now I should call him Charmin, you know, instead of Chairman.
I love it, dude. Okay, so five kids, fatherhood. I got two girls. We talked about this outside. And I would love to pick your brain real quick about just the idea of, I think my girls are similar to your girls, where it's like they're going to be this hybrid where they're not going to be necessarily, they don't want to be treated like super soft. And so I'm going to find the balance there because my wife, Gigi, total rock star athlete, like driven. So I do want to find this balance of how do I raise the girls right? And so you having five kids, most of your kids being, you know, was it 13, 11, 10, 12?
Yeah.
Yeah.
13, 12, 11, about to be seven. In 3 days, should I tell you, and six.
So yeah, having like more experience and you've made more mistakes than me because I just haven't been a father as long. So like, what are the things, like who do you want to be as a dad to your girls specifically that you believe are the most important things for them to know about the man who's their dad?
I think first and foremost, you can't tell your kids that you love them enough. You know, I was at a gas pump one day and there was this guy, he saw the kids in my truck.
Yeah.
That I was pumping gas, another guy, he saw my kids. He was an older gentleman. I said, hey man, you got any advice for a young dad trying to raise up a family? He goes, you can't tell your kids you love them enough. I lost my son, you know, and I wish I would have told him I love you more.
Wow.
You know? And so can't tell your kids you love them enough. So, you know, so I certainly want my kids to know that above everything else from a dad perspective, that I love them. You know, I want them to know Jesus. You know, I want them to know that their dad is going to be in heaven.
Mm.
I want them to know that their dad was firm in their faith, and that the faith that he had, you know, was a benefit to their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, you know, if my kids die, you know, I hope that they, you know that. I hope it's not, you know, full of tears. If I die, sorry, I may have said that incorrectly. Mm-hmm. If I die, I hope that my kids know that I'm in heaven and they find joy in that and not a, you know, a time of sorrow. You know, so that's objective number one.
Yeah.
I
like that.
I hope that they know that, you know, I was there for them and supported them and pushed them, and the things that I said no to were for their benefit. and that I was always in their corner. And, you know, I mean, I could go on. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you want, in any given scenario, I hope that I made them independent beings, you know, that are strong and can take over and don't feel like they're second to anybody.
Yeah.
Obviously their faith, but I mean, that they can lead and that, you know, there's nothing that can stand in their way. And I think ultimately that they're good enough.
Yeah. That's fire, bro. I think that raising girls is the highest privilege I can imagine in life as a dad, because many reasons, but especially in the world of social media, comparison's never been more in their face. Mm. There's plenty of things that can come their way, whether it's, you know, food, you know, body image, self-worth, all this stuff. So for me, it's like, if I can speak life and build into these girls and just build that self-worth and that awareness, that way they don't need to go looking for it in other places or other people. That's everything. That's so important for me. And so one of the things I do with Gianna, I don't know if you've seen that on my Instagram, but I'll, at the end of the day, I'm like brushing her teeth and I'm combing her hair, and she's just this little, like, little gummy bear right now. It's so cute. She's getting, you know, leaner and stretching out, but she's just a little ball of energy. And so
I don't think you have anything to worry about, by the way.
With
she's
what?
Gonna lean out.
Yeah,
it's fine.
She's already like, yeah, I could just see the athlete growing. But she'll finish the teeth brush, I'll finish her hair, and then I'll hold her, and I'll, you know, we got some pictures on the wall, so I'm like, who's that? And so she's like, Gianna, mommy. And I go, okay, who's that? She goes, Princess Gianna. And then I say, I'm strong. She goes, I'm strong. I'm healthy. Mm-hmm. I'm kind. I'm brave. I'm loved. I'm Gianna. Mm-hmm. And just like simple reminders, like, I want the girls to be strong. I want them to be brave, but also kind and full of love. And I want them to know they are loved. And I want them to associate all of that with that's who they are.
Yeah, no doubt.
So that's one of my favorite practices right now as a dad.
That's awesome, man. I think, you know, above anything else, man, the time that you spend with them, you know, you could say nothing, but standing in that mirror and just being there, you know, priceless, dude.
Priceless. It's a perfect way to wrap up, too, because you mentioned the feeling of seeing your three boys together on the field, celebrating, coming back to you, celebrating dad. There's no amount of money that would have made that moment not worth you being there.
No, absolutely not.
That's it, bro. So I'm inspired by you, dude. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you wish we would have?
No, man.
Now that you're a hybrid athlete and you're a high rocks athlete.
No, I don't. No, man. I think, you know, I would just say, I think maybe proud isn't, but you should be pleased, man, with yourself. You know, I remember that conversation, you know, when we were at, that restaurant.
So fresh. Yeah.
And, you know, I remember this, like, not scared, but just uncertain direction that you were heading in.
It's very accurate.
And, you know, obviously social media doesn't tell the whole story, but, you know, the smile on your little girl's face, you know, and like some of the messages that I've heard you say about your daughter, you know, that uncertainty is not there anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, and you went out on, you know, a limb and you followed, you know, in faith. And you should be proud of that, man. You should, you know, where you are right now, you know, don't forget to look back and say, like, man, like, I'm chasing the goal. Don't forget to make the next goal a little bit higher.
Dream
Keep
bigger.
Climbing. You know, there's more low-hanging fruit out there for you to grab. Keep grabbing onto it.
Yep.
But man, good for you, man.
Bro, come here, dude. I love you, bro.
Yeah, man.
Thanks for spending time, man. I really appreciate you, and I received that. That's a gift. I'm going to probably play that in my head whenever I need to pick me up, because it's true. All by God's grace, as you know, so abundantly blessed. It's like I just wake up, I'm like, I can't believe God is this great. Life is this good. And there's not always, it's not perfection. It's not always rainbows and butterflies, but
no doubt.
I focus on the good. I'm an eternal optimist.
That's it, man.
So
that's what we're supposed to be, right?
Yeah. Believer.
You can.
Yeah.
You can.
Yeah. That's it, baby. Dude, so good, man. Ian Desmond, let's go.